Imagine that most of us are probably familiar with Smokey the Bear. That's because outside of just being a really cool bear, Smokey the Bear, I mean, it's really the longest running public service announcement within the history of the United States. It goes back actually to the 1940s during World War II, where we're kind of faced with, on the fire front, we're kind of faced with a double whammy situation. I mean, on one hand, in World War II, you had a lot of Americans that are overseas in Germany and in fighting Germany and fighting Japan that otherwise would have been able to be at home to help put out fires if they came out on the mainland. But in addition to that, related to the war effort as well, you actually had the Japanese who had not only plotted to do this and were thinking about doing it more, but had on a few occasions actually been able to send firebombs out onto the West Coast to start fires. And so what do you, and that, thankfully that never, that fizzled out, it didn't go on to anything too much else, but what do you do in that type of situation where you have Americans away from home that can't put out fires, and then on top of that, an enemy that possibly will start fires within the country as well? Well, you come up with Smokey the Bear, this public service announcement that raises awareness just to the fact that very small, simple things that you can do to not create small fires that will ultimately become big ones, so that you don't have to have a huge firefighting force to put out these fires. And that was the original purpose of it. But of course, once the soldiers came back from World War II, it didn't mean that fires quit existing in any type of way. So Smokey the Bear, I mean, they kept him up all the way to the present day. And he's evolved a little bit as well as our understanding of fires and wildfires has evolved also. But we all know who Smokey is, and we remember that motto that he had. That is all, actually, it's a little different now, but the one that I remember was just, only you can prevent forest fires. And James here, in a similar vein to Smokey the Bear, he's saying, I mean, only you can prevent sins of the tongue. I mean, only you, or if we use that fire metaphor that he brings up, this very potent within these few verses in James chapter 3, 1 through 12 that we've read. I mean, only you can prevent fires of the tongue. In fact, when we think about it, and we think about all the, when we look and we think about dysfunction that exists in our lives and our relationships with people, when we think of dysfunction that happens in the church or just in our workplace or whatever, I mean, how many of those occasions, I mean, maybe every one of those in some type of way, I mean, starts with some type of spark set out by the tongue. And maybe if it wasn't started, it definitely gets worse from how the tongue is used or how people talk. And so James is raising awareness to that if we can fix the small things, then we won't have these big fires in our life set by our tongue. And in fact, James uses this fiery image, I mean, in verses, especially in verses 5 through 6, and it gets very powerful as well. It's not just the tongue is a fire in verse 6. It's a world of unrighteousness. It's set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. I mean, that's about as powerful as you get in terms of a metaphor, in terms of an image. And it reminds us, kind of like many things within the book of James, of things that Jesus said, because Jesus was big on how we used our words. Jesus was very big on this. It's not just about what you do, but it's about what you say as well that really matters. So, I mean, we think back to the Sermon on the Mount, for example, that Jesus said, okay, great, fantastic, wow, you don't commit adultery. I mean, you don't commit murder. But, I mean, if you're insulting your brother, if you're insulting somebody, if you're calling them a fool, then you can say, great, I don't commit murder. But you have these seeds of hate in your heart that, I mean, if nurtured, I mean, they're going to spill out to things even worse than what you're saying as well. And you have these seeds of hate in your heart that still puts you far away from God. Jesus, later in the book of Matthew, in 12:34, he'd say it another way, that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. In other words, there are things that we dwell on, that we think about, that we pull into our lives, that we consider and ruminate on. And those types of things, they're not going to first manifest themselves in kind of our extreme category acts that we have of murder or stealing or adultery or things like that. They don't manifest themselves like that first initially. But even if we don't commit those acts that we kind of have in this other category, they start bubbling out of our heart in the way that we speak, whether it's in the way that we insult somebody else, or whether it's in the way that we lie, or whether it's in the way that we flirt with people that we have no business flirting with. The way that we use our words and our mouth matters, because it not only shows where we are as Christians, but it also shows the direction that we're going in as well. And this is kind of why James is, he says in 5, the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. And so again, just kind of like Smokey did for last 75 years and running, trying to remind us that if we focus on the small things that we can do to prevent forest fires, I mean, just simple things like not throwing flammable objects into the woods or making sure that your campfires are completely put out. James is saying if we can focus on the simple things that we can do of taming the tongue and controlling what we say and being contemplative, being contemplating what we say before we say it, then that's a good way and a good course to stop some of those bigger fires that happen in our lives. But it starts ultimately with recognizing the dangers of our tongue in the first place. And I want to use this metaphor of fire throughout the book of James and in applying it to the way that James talks about the tongue as we go through chapter 3. But when he talks about the tongue, the first point that James makes is that the tongue, like fire, the tongue invites judgment. So both the tongue and fire, they invite judgment. And he says this in chapter 3, verse 1 about the tongue, that not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. So the way we talk brings us under this judgment of greater strictness. And fires do this as well. We don't typically think about fires in this way. We think about fires bringing judgment to other people, or we think about fires bringing harm to other people, but we don't typically think of fires as inviting judgment on ourselves. But if you've ever seen a Western movie, or maybe a war movie, you know this is exactly the case. That if you're in enemy territory, I mean, if you're in Comanche land, or if you're in over enemy lines in Nazi Germany, you don't start a fire. You don't start an open fire, because what it's going to do, the smoke and the light and everything about it, is going to attract enemies from all over the place, and you're going to fall under judgment from, because they're going to, that fire is like a beacon for everybody that doesn't want you to be there. In the same way, it's the American military, actually, since at least the Vietnam War, has instructed the military to create, when they create fires in enemy lines, they create what are called Dakota fire pits, or Dakota fire holes. It's a fire that you build underneath the ground so that the light can't be seen around, and so it doesn't produce a whole lot of smoke, because they recognize that fires, they invite judgment. And our tongues are exactly the same way, that even when we have the best intentions at heart, or even when we intend well, our words are kind of like these beacons that invite judgment from people that hear our words. And this is especially true if you're in a position of teaching in any type of way, which is the point that James is very immediately making. That when we speak, I mean, our words are going to fall under a stricter judgment. And this happens, and there's kind of, initially, this is, our words fall under stricter judgment just from God. I mean, if you think about a teacher, kind of in the same way that the elders are going to be held accountable for the flock that's underneath them. And parents are held accountable for the children that they raise and how they raise them. So also teachers are held accountable for not only what they teach, but how it's taught and the people that are under them that learn from them. And even, and James gets to this in verse 2, I mean, we all stumble in many ways. I mean, we all stumble in what we say. So sometimes even when we have the best intents, we can lead people a wrong way, which just means we have to be more aware of how we use words, how we're talking and speaking. Because it's also much worse than just the fact that God judges us for how we speak. But we all know this very well in our modern day and age when we think about it, that we're judged by other people for how we speak. And other people aren't as fair as God is when they judge our words. Because God, at the very least, he knows our heart. Unlike other people that don't know our heart or our intents. And a lot of times, people that hear us speak, they tend to not even know what we say on certain occasions. They just know what they think that we've said. This is a reality that we deal with. And this is hard as Americans as well, because, I mean, we all know our First Amendment, the very First Amendment, the right to free speech, which is something that even, this is funny, I mean, this is, even as a kid, you know that we live in a free country and I can say whatever I want to say because you use that with your brothers and sisters, even before you know the order of your amendments or anything like that. And what happens, I mean, from a childhood up, I mean, we have this idea that I can say whatever I want to say and don't judge me for what I want to say. And we start placing the emphasis and the value in the wrong place. We place value on the freedom that we should have to run our mouths just for the sake of running our mouths. And we don't place the value where it needs to be on the wisdom that comes with using our mouths in a wise way, using our words wisely and thinking and considering what we say. We all have friends that we're close with. We have family members that we're close with, people that we can talk to about all sorts of things. We have friends and people in our intimate circles where we can bounce ideas off of them that we wouldn't want to do that with other people. We have friends that we can joke with in ways that we wouldn't necessarily do with other people. We have friends that we can tell things about ourselves to that wouldn't be wise revealing those to other people. And that's part of the problem, that sometimes when we take that setting of how we act and how we talk with our friends and try to translate that into broader settings, and we aren't careful or aren't prudent and don't think or give thought to how other people will take what we say, we invite that judgment onto ourselves, no matter where our heart is on the matter. And that's just kind of the reality that we deal with in our day and age. And nowhere is this more clear than, of course, the internet. I mean, there's this inverse relationship between how much, the less somebody knows you, there tends to be this case, the less somebody knows you, the more they're going to judge you for what they say, because they don't know where your heart is, they don't know what you're thinking, and, I mean, let's face it, it's just easier to judge somebody that you don't know at all. And so in this age with the internet, you compound that with the fact that you can go online and post something for anybody, anywhere to see, and you have a recipe for, like, a lot of disaster, which is what you see in our modern day. In fact, this is not even a particularly Christian perspective. I mean, you see the world itself kind of lamenting that this is the fact of the world we live in. And I read about a month ago, it was a weekly news magazine that I'll read, and it had an article kind of about the internet age and about the judgment and everything that happens within it and about all the chaos that happens. And it said this, and it was talking about Twitter in particular. And so tweets, or I'll translate that, just think online post, online conversation, but tweets feel like conversation, but are judged and punished like writing. I mean, that was kind of the tagline on it, that tweets feel like conversation, but are judged and punished like writing. The point of it, and we've seen this just on the news, just for example, we might have experienced like a miniature version of this in our lives if you've been on the internet, but a story like this comes up all of the time, that someone somewhere posts something frivolously and carelessly, someone else sees it, criticizes it, blasts it out to all kinds of other people, and the very least thing that's going to happen is that person, that initial poster, is going to have all kinds of angry people angry at him or her for whatever he posted. But in the worst cases, I mean, we've seen people lose their jobs or not get promotions for that. Sometimes for things that they've said 10 years ago or 15 years ago that are dug up. The point that I'm making in all of this and trying to weave it back is this. That we can complain, or we can moan, or we can bemoan the fact that that's not fair, or that's not right, or that we live in a society that is very heavy on judgment, but very light on forgiveness And especially that last one is actually pretty right. They were heavy on judgment and very light on forgiveness. But that's the reality of where we're at. And as Christians who are supposed to be wise and supposed to be aware and supposed to act with wisdom, we need to care about what we say. We need to care about how we say it. We need to care about what we post if we're online and how we post it, because not everybody sees it in the same way or in the same light. And it reflects back on Christians, and it invites judgment. Whenever we speak, whether in a teaching context or not, whether out on the internet or not, it invites judgment, and that's something as Christians we have to be aware of, because our tongues are like fire in that sense. They invite judgment. But more than that, our tongues are like fire, or our tongues are fire, because they're untamable. And this is James' point that he gets to next. And look at me, and let's look with me in verses 5 through 8, and I'll reread that. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature, can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. So when we think of the tongue, when we think of fire, this is actually generally how we think of fire. We think of fire as being untamable and uncontrollable. And experts that study fire, experts that study fire, historically speaking, they say that this is really the last thing that humans have, in our relationship with fire, this is the last thing that humans have ever been able to do with it, is control it. And I mean, we can look back and think that we still don't do it really extremely well. But historically for man, I mean, after Adam, we don't know when man first discovered fire, but the first people that discovered fire wouldn't have built it themselves. Most likely, they would have seen it occurring naturally in the world through lightning strikes and things like that. And ultimately, what they would have done from that point on is made a movement that when you see fire within the environment, trying to capture it and bottle it up in some type of way, finding some type of fuel that's slow burning, like dung, for instance, that you could keep that fire with you for a while, use it for cooking, use it to ward off bugs. But the big transformational step, of course, with people is when we were able to build fire for the very first time. This is when you can build a fire. Not only can you cook whenever you want to, not only can you build, but you can build tools that can, you can build tools that help you do other things through metallurgy and things like that. You can defend yourself better with the weapons that you're going to make through metallurgy and things like that as well. So once we were able to create fire, that was kind of the big turning point for us in many ways. But being able to create something, I mean, you find out very quickly that if you're going to build a fire, you better be able to know how to extinguish it. And it's a rule that applies to fire, that it's always easier to start a fire than it is to stop a fire. And our tongues are really the same way, too. That kind of like fire, the first things that we do, we don't come out of the womb just talking or chattering, but we observe that from other people. We observe it. And eventually we kind of capture those words. We mimic phrases, mimic words that people say. And eventually we're able to utilize those ourselves and create new sentences that no one had ever created before, ourselves and from our imagination. But soon, or hopefully sooner than later, we recognize that our words are kind of like fire in that way as well. That it's easier to say something than it is to take it back. It's easier to start a conversation than to undo the effects of what you said or of that conversation. And this is the point James is making here, that the tongue itself is untamable. I mean, you can tame your dog to roll over or to shake your hand or to sit for an extended period of time, but you can't, for the life of us, I mean, boy, if you have something to say, and if you really have something to say, you just can't keep your mouth shut to keep those words in. It just seems to flow out. Even when you know, you can be aware that what you're about to say is going to get you in a lot of trouble later, but our mouths just seem to open up by their own will and let it out. Our tongues, he's using hyperbole here, but our tongues are untamable in the very same way that fire is. And it's not just that our tongues are untamable, But the damage that our tongues do is untamable as well. In nowhere does this really play out than in the sin of gossip and in what gossip is. I mean, gossip from a biblical standpoint, or gossip doesn't just happen in the Bible, but gossip in the Bible or out of the Bible is essentially telling and spreading the private affairs of someone to other people that have no business needing to know that. And the problem, of course, with gossip is that what the act of gossip is, whether we think about it or not, and this is part of the problem, and this is what James is asking us to do, to think about how we use our words, how we use our tongue, because only when we are aware of it can we actually take any type of action in preventing it. But gossip at its heart, what it is, is the act of gossip. When we gossip against somebody, we're writing them off. Gossip is the act of passing judgment against someone in the sense that people we gossip about are people that we believe are undeserving of forgiveness in some type of way from us. And so we tell what they've done to other people who will be complicit in judging that person by either ostracizing themselves from that person or by joining us in disapproving in that person. We're in no part of that story have we gone to this person who we've gossiped against to try to heal them or redeem them in some type of way. Gossip itself, another way to think about it, is that when we gossip about people, what we're ultimately doing is defining that person, or trying to define that person, by their very worst actions. I mean, the very worst secret that we've heard about somebody that we disapprove of, when we spread that to other people, we're trying to get other people to disapprove of that person and define that person by those very actions. And that's something, of course, that we would never want to have done to ourselves. I mean, gossip, you never gossip about good things. You always gossip about bad things. But ourselves, we would never want that to have it be done to us. Because when we gossip, well, for ourselves, we all recognize that we sin, that we have stuff in our lives that we don't want, that we want to be between me and God and maybe whoever I sinned against. And we don't want everybody knowing, because it's nobody else's business. And I've moved on past that. And that's why we don't tell everybody all of our business in every type of way, because we know that we're better than our very worst actions. We know that our very worst actions should not define us. But when we gossip, we're showing what we really think of that. That we think that other people shouldn't be treated in the same way that we should be treated. And so the tongue and the damage it does. I mean, I heard a metaphor about this a while back from it was 15 years or more ago. I remember talking to an elder that had mentioned about gossip, that it's kind of like having 100 sheets of paper and tearing it up into little pieces and going on a tall building and just throwing it out into the wind. I mean, you're never going to recover that. Gossip is like fire, and the tongue is like a fire, because what it does and the damage it does, we set sparks with it, and then there's no possible way often that we can repair the damage that we've done from that. But the tongue, it's not just inviting judgment on ourselves. And it's not just that the tongue is untamable and the damage that it does is untamable. But the tongue itself, it also betrays us too. The tongue and our words betray us as people, the users of those words. And he gets to this in those final verses in 9 through 12. I'll reread those. With it, with our tongue, we bless our Lord and Father. And with it, we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. The tongue itself, and like fire, I mean, it's betraying. It doesn't care who started it. I mean, it'll turn on you just as much as anything else. There was a, back at Christmas, this has a good ending, so it's not, don't worry, no one's going to perish in it. But I remember around Christmas time in the Dallas area, there was a kid, there was a story in the news about a kid who asked for a magnifying glass for his 12th birthday. I don't remember if he told his parents that he was asking for a magnifying glass because he wanted to start a fire. But, I mean, if a 12-year-old is asking for a magnifying glass, I mean, I would imagine you probably want to know. Like, there's probably some other use that he's putting that towards than just to looking at bugs or something. And so, sure enough, he got his magnifying glass, and sure enough, he also started a fire in his front yard that caught the whole lawn on fire. And like I said, it was a good ending in the sense, I mean, not for the lawn, but for everybody else. It didn't catch onto the fire, I mean, house. It didn't catch onto the neighbor's house. And, I mean, everybody in their Christmas jammies came out to put it out and were able to put it out before the fire trucks arrived. But the point from it, I mean, that fire didn't care that this kid had set it. The fire didn't care that it could have killed him, that it could have taken out his house. Fire doesn't care who sets the fire, and it'll betray us just as much as anybody else. And so our words and how we speak is the same way. Our words betray who we really are. We might think that we're one person, but our words really show who we are. And this goes back to what I said, what I mentioned earlier with Jesus, that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And James is saying the same type of thing here, that we can say that we love God, that we bless God, but we've seen the person that does that on one hand, and then maybe in the second sentence later, I mean, he's cursing somebody who's been made in God's image. I mean, in essence, James is making the point that when we curse other individuals, I mean, we're harming God as well, because people are made in his image. And we've seen those people, and we might sometimes act like those people, blessing God and then cursing somebody else, blessing God and calling somebody else a fool. And that doesn't mean that we're irredeemably evil or anything like that, but it does mean that we start falling into and shaping into the category of what of that word that we hate, that hypocrite word. That's what a hypocrite is, the double-minded person that can bless God on one hand, but do something completely at variance with that. On the other hand, the hypocrite himself, the word hypocrite is actually, it's not, I mean, now it is, but initially it wasn't a bad word. It was just a neutral word. A hypocrite was someone, was an actor in one of the Greek plays. A hypocrite is a word for an actor. But you can see how that word starts translating into the real life, because a hypocrite in real life is someone who's acting, who is not the real thing that they profess to be, but it's something else underneath that. And what our words do, our words kind of, they're this fire that really burns away whatever pious robes we have on the outside. And they show who we really are underneath it to the people around us. And this is why, I mean, this is, if you've ever talked to somebody that's fallen out of the church or fallen away at some point in time, there can be many excuses for why they've chosen to leave the church. But one of the ones, I mean, one of the most common ones that comes up all of the time, you probably already know where I'm going with this as well, is that one of the excuses that comes up all the time is, well, I'm not a part of the church because the church is just full of hypocrites. It's just full of people that say one thing and do another. And on one hand, when people say that, you have to take it with a grain of salt, right? Because, I mean, someone that doesn't want to be part of the church, they're going to look for any type of reason to justify why they aren't part of the church. And plus, in addition to that, I mean, the church is made up of people that recognize that they have sin in their lives, that recognize that they're sinners and are trying to get better. The church is made up of imperfect people, and those imperfect people within the church realize that they're imperfect. So, of course, you're going to find people that often act in variance with how they're wanting to be. But digging into that some, I mean, James here is pointing out that there are people that act with a dual nature within the church. He's talking to the church and saying that you act like hypocrites at times when you do these types of things. So he's asking us to dig down into this. And we can recognize that there's a difference between the person who is imperfect. There's a difference between the person who's imperfect and the person who's a hypocrite. In other words, there's a difference between someone who makes mistakes but recognizes that they make mistakes and lives humbly because of that, with humility in relation to God and other people, because they know that they've made mistakes in their past as well. There's a difference between that person and the person that makes mistakes and just goes about their day acting as if they've never made a mistake in their life, and acting as if, because of that, that they can act harshly or with criticalness towards people that are trying to come to the Lord but make the mistakes themselves. And that's the difference between someone who's recognizing that they're trying to get better and someone who is a hypocrite. And the problem is that within the church, if we bless God, and then on the other hand, we curse man, even if we don't really realize that we're who we are underneath all of it, other people see it and other people realize it. And few things than these sins of the tongue that I've talked about, I mean, just this uncaring for who people are, or the gossip that can happen, or just being frivolous in the way that we speak. I mean, few things can mess up relationships, whether it's in the workplace or within families or within the church. For us, it's important that we're aware how the tongue is very much like fire, how it invites judgment, how it's untamable, how ultimately the tongue itself, it betrays ourself, it betrays who we really are to other people, and people see that. And the difficulty in all of it is that we like to talk. I mean, we have mouths, so we think that we need to use them. And part of the problem with this as well, sometimes it feels like we have our mouth and we have our brain, and we only have enough energy to use one of those at the same time. And sometimes we think that our issues, like, this isn't an issue that we can talk our way out of, because there's not any type of fire that you can quench just by feeding it and feeding it and feeding it. But kind of like in those Smokey the Bear PSA announcements, James again is doing the same thing with us. The big problems we have in our lives and the big things that are going on, I mean, there can be various causes for it, but so often it's the tongue that either starts these things or that exacerbates the situation or adds more fuel to the fire and makes it more fiery, more deadly. And for us, as Christians, to be aware of it, if we start with the small things, then we can prevent the big outbreaks of that. And as Christians, it's not that the mouth's bad in any type of way, but the mouth can be put to the mouth. We need our words. We need to speak. And in fact, it's with our mouth that we confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, that he's the Son of God. That it's that, through baptism, being dying and being raised to new life, that we're born again into his kingdom. That we're born into his kingdom so that we can use our tongues for good purposes, for speaking the word, for spreading the gospel to others. The question, of course, it always comes down to, are we willing to do that? Am I a part of his family? Do I want to be a part of his family? Have I been a part of his family, but have I stepped away? The invitation, as always, is for us. If you have need, please come forward as we stand.